This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. My co-host tonight, Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvissuto, is not here right this minute. He's probably fighting traffic to get here, and also, oh, there he is. Look at that. And he's bringing a rising star at the Financial Consulate with us, Christina Vaughn. And so it would be great to have the two of them with us tonight. And but we're here tonight on an open show. That means you get to call and direct the conversation. Tonight, you get to determine what we're going to talk about and hear about something that's important to you, whether it's investments or income taxes or elder care planning or estate planning or Social Security or 401k plans or IRAs or Roths or whatever the case may be. You get to determine that direction of the conversation tonight. And the way to do that is call 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question tonight on our open show. 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask your question, direct the conversation. Tonight's an open show. Tommaso, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great now that I got here. Everybody's going to be calling in because they're all stuck on the Beltway.
I could tell. I went the back way, and that was jammed up also. So, but I left early enough that it didn't really matter for me.
That's right.
So, but I know you were in a meeting until late. So
I was.
Hopefully, it was a good meeting.
It was great, and Christina was nice enough to join us today. She said, "What do you guys do on that show?" I said, "Well, why don't you come along?"
There you go, Christina. How are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you tonight, and we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to direct the conversation of the show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question. I was talking to Sean this morning about a very important topic, and that is something that you have to understand. As you're, because as we talk about in our company, everything is about economic bias. As Karl Marx said, follow the money,
right?
You know, and you see where the money is being made. And, you know, journalists get money based on the number of clicks that go on to their articles. They, you know, whether they get dollars for it, they get popularity for it. And if they can show that the articles they're writing gets lots of clicks, they make more money doing that.
Yep.
And so they're sensationalizing more and more and more their articles, and they tend to be freelancers, you know, whereas in the past, you pretty much had advertisers were controlled by a small group of big media outlets like the, you know, ABC, CBS, and NBC. It's the only place you could advertise, and it was Nielsen ratings that mattered, and, you know, they could control to some degree the journalist versus the advertisers, and they tried to keep those separate. Well, nowadays, most of these things are all done by freelancers, and so they get more money by showing that the articles they're writing is getting more traffic, and by that more traffic, then therefore the Google clicks and the clicks and the, you know, for all those advertisements that go on these things brings more money in, and so you're seeing more and more and more sensationalization of articles, be it political or financial, and so media is detrimental. There is no doubt. Media is it always has been, Tom, but it is more detrimental today for an investor, somebody who's managing their money or somebody who's managing money for you to be focused on what media is telling you.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, even right now I'm looking at a site and, you know, it's, why shouldn't you pay off your mortgage? Forget Social Security if you own a home. Do this. You know, the market rallies, you know, all sorts of things like that. So, like you said, they sensationalize it. Oh, I got to find out what they're talking about. And then, you know, like you said, the journalist gets paid, there's advertising, but it's a sensationalized thing. You said it this morning, you know,
the market plummets yesterday. Today, the article is market surges,
Right.
Well, you know, and they don't put any correlation between yesterday and today that the market did nothing in 2 days.
Exactly.
Even though it went up a lot yesterday and down a lot, the day before. So anyway, you know, we're on an open show. You can call in anything you want. Jerry's calling in from Laurel on home buying. So, Jerry, how can we help you? Jerry?
Hello.
Yeah.
My wife and I are buying a house with my daughter and son-in-law and contributing each the same amount. It has an in-law suite. And trying to figure out for tax reasons in the future, should we have our names on the deed and contract or... suppose we need a Medicare or something like that, would they count that as part of our income?
Yeah, so, you know, it's an interesting question, Jerry, and there are lots of twists and turns to the question you're asking. So by having your name on there, the most important part is it protects your rights in the property. And, you know, if I told you all the stories that I've seen in 35 years as an advisor, you know, you would probably say, maybe I should have my name on the property. But if you're totally not concerned about that, then, you know, what you're referring to is not Medicare, Jerry. Medicare's for seniors who turn 65 and it's to pay your medical bills. What you're referring to is Medicaid when you run out of money and you need medical custodial assistance. You need long-term care, assisted living, home health care, or something of that point. And the point is yes, your name on that house would negate you from Medicaid assistance, and it could even affect it if they were if one of the married couples, because the house isn't necessarily 100% theirs.
Right.
So there are issues, and it depends on what's most important to you: Medicaid planning, estate planning, income tax planning, protection of your rights for your investment in the house. You have to balance those four different objectives out when you decide which are you going to do. Are you going to put your names on the house, or are you not going to put your name on the house? And I can't answer that specifically without going through a series of questions with you and your wife to say what's most important to you.
Very good. But that's helpful to lay out those four different areas, and I appreciate it.
All right, sir. Well, good question, though. Very good question.
Yes, great question.
We get it asked a lot. All right, Jerry, take care. Good question. We got to go on our first pause tonight with traffic. We're going to be right back. Money, riches, and wealth. Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE. Or visit us online at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Tommaso Bonbon.
Yes, sir.
How are you, Bonbon?
I'm doing great.
So, Bonnie, no. Hey, you know, that's what I was going to say, Linda Ronstadt. I knew it was something like that.
You knew it was a girl.
I knew it was female. You know, give me credit. Something. There you go. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, an open show. You get to call and ask any question you want, be it on any topic, you know, and so forth. It doesn't matter. So you can call in 410-922-6680 and ask the question that's important to you and lead the conversation.
We had a new client in today. We want to shout out and wish him happy birthday.
Sure.
That's right. This morning, right? We had Gary in.
So, Gary. You know, and birthday, Gary's Gary. A listener.
Yeah.
So happy birthday today, Gary. Yeah. We promised we'd do a shout-out, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
So we have lots of great listeners, obviously,
you know?
That, you know, now I was driving in, or I was listening to WCBM, waiting for our show to come on, and I heard that Sean Hannity said that there was a show on CBM that was one of the nation's best financial talk radios.
Right.
It wasn't us.
It wasn't talking about
no.
us? No.
And, but I think he gets paid to say that.
Yeah, I think he does. That's right. That's right. We don't pay anybody to say anything.
We don't take any... We don't sell advertising. We just do two ads of our own on the show, and that's it. We don't take advertisers for our show. And because we feel that it would be a conflict of interest for our show, because we don't always feel that everyone can always have a great product at all times. So there are a lot of companies we like, but, you know, we're never sure that they're going to still be ones we like in the future.
That's right.
So anyway, if you want to call in, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask your question, we do have one caller on the line. Did you have something?
Yeah, well, we'll take the caller. I'll fill in.
So, you fill in. We're going to Mark in Cadenceville. Mark, how can we help you?
Yes, Mark, my question was about the 5-year look back, and if you did that, how do you access that once you've, I guess, liquidated and put it into trust or whatever? What's the vehicle to if you needed some money, you could go to?
So now you're talking about a senior citizen who wants to protect their assets from Medicaid, right? And they're going to move their assets out for, and it's got to be gifted away within 5 years. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes.
And so now your question is, okay, I do that. I'm worth $500,000, and I transfer most, if not all, of my assets over to something or someone, and I need money back. So the answer to your question is this, Mark. I either move the money to my children or to, you know, somebody who I trust explicitly, and I trust them to give it back to me if I need it, all right? And then if that transfer to that person is more than 5 years, I, you know, then, you know, those assets are now protected forever, okay? Now, the problem with that is, let's say I move it to my child, and my child gets divorced 3 years later. Now, all the assets I've moved to my child are now potentially subject to that divorce. If my child gets sued, my child falls into bankruptcy, something of that sort, all my assets get caught in there. So then the second part of your question is, well, what about a trust? Yes, there are Medicare trusts that you can establish. They are what are called grantor Medicare trusts. And they get a little more complicated and a little more expensive to operate, but they're not horrible. You can put your money in there, and under certain circumstances, you can get some of the money back from those trusts without affecting the Medicaid eligibility of that trust. But that's where the domain of a Kevin Bress or, you know, Laurie Frank of Frank and Frank, you know, those are the type of domain of people like that if you wanted to do something. But, yes, it can be done.
Okay, that helps a lot. Thank you.
All right, Mark. You take care. All right, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question and direct the conversation you want. So far, it seems to be... you know,
Medicare,
well, Medicaid.
Medicaid, protecting assets.
Yeah, well, you know, the first questioner, you know, he was looking at buying a house with children.
Right.
But then he threw the Medicaid question in because obviously it's an important component.
Yeah.
The next one was talking about how do you get your own money back if you need it, and, you know, et cetera. Right.
Yep.
So let's go to Don in Falston Seminars. Don, how can we help you?
Drew, I need a lot of help, buddy. Lots of help.
Okay.
Trying to save money. My medical costs have gone up tremendously in the last 7-8 years for some odd reason or another. My premiums have gone up. My co-pays have gone up. And, you know, now I'm getting over the 7.5% that, you know, I can actually deduct it on my 1040 and stuff.
So you're over 65 years of age.
No, not yet. And the other thing is, I'll be 62 this fall. But I also have an 18-year-old daughter that's still on my medical plan, and unfortunately she has type 1 diabetes, so she has some medical expenses monthly.
Okay.
All right, so I don't even know when I'm eligible for Medicare whether I can jump off my plan because I don't know if I'll still be insuring her or not. And that's exactly what I'm calling about is I went on the Internet this morning, and they had health saving accounts. They had like six different types of accounts, and they all do something a little bit different medical-wise, and whether they're tax-deductible, pre-tax money, this, that, and the other. So what I'm screaming at is, help, please have a seminar just on health care so that we can figure out what in the world we need to do to set up what different types of plans, either through our employers or through ourselves, so that I can save as much money pre-tax, after-tax, during-tax, whatever tax that I can avoid legally.
Well, you know, Don, you know, a seminar on that would be great, but what you really need to do is you need to, because each individual is specific and unique, and so what really needs to be done is thought out, okay, what options do you have for medical, what options do your daughter have for medical, and are you married or single?
Yeah, I'd love to sit down with somebody, you have somebody in your group that is like an expert to sit down and talk with about that.
Well, we do that all the time in our financial physical. That's always everything that has to do with any part of personal finances. That's the type of thing we do for our clients. And so this is a common question we ask is, now, are you married or single?
I'm married.
You're married. So, you know, what you'd want to do is you need to look at the alternatives for you, for your daughter, for your wife. Who has options? What options do you have? How do we figure out which is the best one? And we do that all the time. It's just a routine part of the financial physical where we're going over all your estate planning, all your income taxes, all your insurances, all your company benefits, all of your investments, all of your goals and objectives, your balance sheet, your cash flow. So it's a common thing, and it has to be specific to each individual.
Yeah, because I definitely feel like I'm leaving money on the table.
Well, it's very common that people are. Most people aren't taking advantage. When we do these, we were just looking at the people this morning. They weren't taking in. The next client that came in at about 3 o'clock also wasn't taking advantage of all the options he had available to him. So it's very common, and it really has to be thought out. And you're right. You're at 65, you can go on Medicare, and there are some great reasons why you might want to do that. And it will not impact negatively your daughter or your wife. They will still be able to stay on a medical plan either with your employer or they'll have other options available to them. So, you know, it's a great question. And I wish I could give you here's what you do, Don. It's not that easy with medical insurance. It's a mess. Obamacare made it a mess, and so far the Republicans are proving that they don't have anything to answer to it either. So,
I've been watching all that closely and stuff like that, and I'm shocked we haven't gotten the repeal and just let it go to conditions and open up the state line.
They're not going to do that. Look, you know, here's President Obama did Obamacare not because he wanted Obamacare. He did it specifically to screw up the health care system, that there could be a national takeover of a national health system for the country. That's why he implemented Obamacare. I would bet any amount of money that he and his colleagues talked about that. We pass Obamacare. If it works, great. And if it doesn't, that's better, because then we're stuck with national health care. That's what he wants, and that's what we may end up getting if the Republicans don't get their act together soon.
Yeah, how long do you think it'll be before we go to a single-payer system out of this deal?
We're one election away if a Democrat gets elected. Let's put it that way. I got to run, Don. So if you want to call into our office, and we'll do that for you without any problem, 410-823-7283. All right? All right, we got to go to traffic. We're on a little late right now. Take it away, traffic.
You need help organizing your financial life? You thought about what retirement looks like when you go beyond just the numbers? The financial physical is the first step in working together to organize your personal finances and your goals. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. Call today to schedule your financial physical and experience the difference. Learn at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com or 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
Oh.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show tonight. That means you get to call in and ask the questions. 410-922-6680. That was such a boring song, I didn't even comment on it.
No, you didn't. You didn't.
You notice that? But who was that, Chris? Loving Spoonful, and I wasn't so nice.
You didn't have to be.
And I wasn't, you know. Actually, I used to like the Loving Spoonful.
Uh-huh.
I can't, what was the song that, you know, that they did? Did they do Hot Town Summer in the City? Look at that. Look at that.
We pulled that one out. There you go.
I'll tell you. I mean, maybe I am a music aficionado,
that's right.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, if you want to call and ask a question. You know, the last caller's question was great,
mm-hmm,
you know, on medical insurance,
yep.
You've got a child that's on medical and bills are mounting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anyone could comment about this, you are the expert of medical insurance and how to work with it and you know, the risk that you're taking and so forth.
Yeah, it's been incredible to watch just even, you know, over the 4 years I've been with the consulate, which has been during the same time that, you know, the Obamacare program has come into play, and it has gotten to be so expensive. And trying to juggle, I've got 5 kids. I've just kicked one of them off the plan because he could get a plan through his employer for a cheaper rate than what it was costing me to have him on ours, even though he was only 23. We're seeing it frequently with new employees that come to work for us that they stay on their parents' plan. And so people have government plans and the like. But the small employers and even the bigger employers, the plans have gotten so expensive. And people, I think they make a mistake where they tend to go with the premiums where they'll pay the higher premium. And then they, you know, because they don't want to pay the doctor, they get coverages that are, you know, lower out-of-pocket costs there. And, they, you know, that's often not the right thing to do, except in his case where he's got a daughter with type 1 diabetes where, you know, there's insulin costs, doctor visits. So they might want to consider, you know, a higher premium plan that's because they're going to use up their benefits quicker. So to your point earlier.
Yeah, but he could also go with a slightly high deductible, get him into the HSA category,
right. True.
But then contribute the max to the HSA,
yeah.
And it would probably work out to be an ultimate
right.
Bonanza for him.
Yeah, and
because he's eligible for the catch-up contribution. Mm-hmm. If his wife is over 55, that would be $8,750
right.
Into the HSA. If he had a deductible of just $2,500,
yeah.
That really could be a slam dunk.
Exactly. So you have to look at each, as you said earlier, each person's plan is a little different. Sometimes it makes sense to split the family up and have them on different plans. Sometimes it makes sense for them all to be together.
Yeah, especially if you can get one of them qualified for the exchange and get subsidies for them, and that's
right.
Always possible too.
Yeah.
But there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all or a seminar. I can do a seminar in Social Security. I can do a seminar on lots of different things. But to try to educate on the medical because of the uniqueness of everybody's situation, that's a whole different world.
Yep.
I got to go to a caller here, Tony in Reisterstown on Social Security. Tony, how can we help you?
Yeah, how you doing?
Great, and you?
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to get some information. It's been a little problem, but I guess I'm calling up in reference to my wife, okay?
Yep.
She will, in December, she will be 62.
Right.
Okay. I'm 80, okay? I'm not the problem, and she, I don't think she's the problem. Now, what does she do, exactly what does she do at age 62.
Now, was she working all of her life?
No.
So
on and off, like little jobs, you know, stuff like that. But not no permanent type job. No.
No permanent. So she's gonna collect her Social Security as a spouse under your Social Security. Is that correct?
What does that mean? I don't know.
In other words, what's your Social Security check? Do you get a good one every year? Do you get a couple thousand a month on Social Security?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So she's going to collect as a spouse, and she'll get half of your Social Security.
Is that when I'm dead?
No, that's right now.
Oh, right now. Okay.
But here's
why do you say it that way, though? I don't understand.
Well, you see, a spouse who doesn't have her own benefit... is able to collect either half of her spouse's benefit or her own benefit, whichever is higher. And since you said she didn't really work that much, we're going to assume that her benefit is lower than half of yours.
Okay. Now
here's the problem, Tony, is that if she claims at 62, whether she claims her own benefit or yours, she's going to discount her benefit by 35%. So let's say she's going to get $1,000 a month. If she claims it at 62, she's only going to get like $650 a month. She's not going to get $1,000 a month. She has to wait until she's approximately 66 years of age in order to collect the full $1,000 a month.
Okay.
So you might want to wait, have her wait. If her health is good and your health is good, you might want to wait until she's 66. If your health or her health is not, you might want to start claiming soon, even though her benefit will be reduced.
Okay.
Because when you pass away, she's going to collect your benefit for the rest of her life.
Okay.
So we'd want to figure out a break-even kind of thing of when, if she were to start collecting today at 62 in December, and, you know, when the break-even is versus waiting to 63, all the way up to 66, and then how long you would need to live, you know, and where that break-even period is.
Correct.
You know, and that's kind of the analysis. So that factors in your health and or expect life expectancies.
Right. So, and it also would require to know what her benefit is,
right.
I mean, versus your benefit and which one. But nonetheless, if you, how much are you getting a month?
What's that?
How much are you getting a month?
Mine is about $1,300.
$1,300. Then her benefit's only going to be about $600 or $700 even as half of a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to get reduced by 35% if she starts claiming at 62 years of age.
Yeah, but see, what it'll be now is that we're really in desperate need of extra money.
Well, then she has to start claiming at 62, whether it's her own benefit.
What do we claim? What do we have to do?
She has to go to Social Security. That's it.
Okay, but is there a way that we can call Social Security up and have them send us some kind of papers? Or do we?
You can do it online if you want to, but if you're not good with that kind
of computer,
well, then she can just go to any Social Security office and just show up one day and wait for her name to be called, or you can call online and make an appointment, which the appointment won't be for about 2 months. So I would suggest she just goes to a Social Security, her local Social Security office, put her name on the list, and wait for them to call her. And
but she needs to wait until she's 62?
She has to wait until she's 62. That's correct.
Okay, so nothing will start until she's age 62. But should she start early, like now it's like June now,
When she turned 62, buddy.
Oh, turned when 62.
When did she turn 62?
December.
Okay. How could you have any idea? Like you're talking to me that she would only be getting like 600. How could anybody come up with a figure like that?
Because I'm listening to what you're telling me you're getting, and she's getting half of yours. Now, it's going to be far more complicated. That's a simplistic way of looking at it, but it's far more complicated, but it's going to be in that ballpark if that's what you're getting. Now, you may be telling me $1,300 a month net after Medicare and all that stuff. So you may actually be getting $1,500 a month, so maybe she's going to get $700 or $750, but it's not going to be much more than that if she's collecting on your benefit.
Uh-huh.
If she has her own benefit, maybe it's $800 a month or something of that sort. I don't know. I'm just doing some guessing based on the numbers you're telling me, but yeah. I'd bet I'm in the ballpark based on what you're telling me.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, I understand. Okay.
So since she turned 62 in December, she can go and apply in October or November to start in December.
Okay, that's what I mean. Okay.
Yeah. All right, buddy?
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care, Tony.
Okay.
And we're going to have to ask Washington to hold if he can. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in. Right now, I've got to take a pause. We're on an open show here on Money, Riches, and Wealth. Take it away, traffic. All right. I'm listening.
Name that tune.
Yeah. It's a harmonica. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Make a Little Magic.
There you go.
All right. Okay, well, I take your word for that. Not sure I know either the song or the group necessarily. No, I wouldn't call that country rock. That's not Marshall Tucker or Charlie Daniels or Little Feat or Amy or Pure Prairie League, et cetera, right? So anyway, we'll take your word for it, Chris. We're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call and ask a question, we have a couple lines open. We got a little time for at least one or two more callers. I have Washington on the line. We're going to go here. What Washington wants to talk about. Washington, how can we help you?
Good evening, Drew and Tommaso.
Hey, good evening.
A question is regarding capital gains tax on the sale of principal residence.
Yep.
All right, just to make sure... capital gains would be the difference between the purchase price and the selling price?
Correct. Well, sort of. Purchase price plus capital improvements after you purchase the place. So you fix your kitchen up, you spend $20,000 on it, you paid $200,000 for the house, your cost basis is now $220,000 minus the sale of the house.
All right.
After expenses, of course, too.
What expenses would that be?
Well, you know, I sell the house for $300,000. I pay a 6% commission. I pay transfer taxes. I pay a couple other things. And I only end up with $275,000. So that's my net sales price minus my cost basis.
Okay.
And then if you're married and you have a capital gain, you get to exclude the first $500,000 of the gain if you've lived in that house at least two of the last 5 years. And if you're single and you sell the house and have a gain, you get to exclude $250,000 of the gain if you live there two of the last 5 years. But you also have to prove that it's your personal residence.
Well, that's both spouses have to have lived in the house two out of five.
That is correct. Both spouses have to be able to prove that it's been their personal residence two out of the last 5 years. There are also some exceptions where you can get a pro rata. So let's say one spouse only, or you both lived in the house for only 1 year out of the last five. You may be able to get a 50% exemption. So a married couple would get 250 and a single would get 125. There are exceptions that would allow you to do that. For the most part, for the simplicity of this conversation, it should be two of the last five.
All right. Now, here's the real question. How complicated does it get when you're moving into a second home before selling the original primary residence?
It doesn't get complicated as long as you sell it within 3 years of leaving that house. So I own a house in Florida, and I own a house in Maryland. Maryland is my personal residence. I intend to move to my Florida house in 2018. So I've lived in my Maryland house for the last 5 years before 2018. 18, 19, 20, I'm still within guideline. If I don't settle on that house by the end of 20, I no longer can take the capital gain exclusion.
All right, so there's 3 years. So it's basically 3 years after having moved out of the primary residence and moving into the secondary residence.
Correct. And there's also an issue with Maryland you should be familiar with. So if I, you know, and you get this all the time. Oh, I hear if I live in Florida and I sell my Maryland house after I move to Florida, they're going to hit me with this huge tax. Well, first off, if it's your personal residence and your agent is on the ball at all, they should be able to get an exemption for you from the state of Maryland because it's your personal residence, that they won't hit you with this quote-unquote tax at all. But even more importantly, it's not a tax. It's a withholding. Yes, it's called a tax, and there's a reason, there's a legal reason why Maryland calls it a tax, but it's still a credit withholding that you can use when you do file your Maryland tax to tell the state of Maryland, excuse me, whether you actually owe tax on the money or not.
On the capital gains, you mean?
On the gain of the sale of the house. Mm-hmm. You see, people were leaving Maryland and going to another state and then selling their property in Maryland and not reporting the sale to Maryland. So they created this withholding tax so that you wouldn't be able to just not report it. You have to report it. And when you do, if you don't owe any tax to Maryland on it, they give you the withholding back from the tax, from the settlement.
Unless the agent says that no withholding is required.
Yeah, if it's your personal residence, there's going to be no tax. You can file for an exemption certificate from the state of Maryland before the house settles, and there will not even be the withholding. But if they don't, okay, and you do have withholding against your house, all you got to do is file a Maryland income tax return and explain to them why the sale of the house does not affect you. You then get to report the money they took from you at settlement, and the state of Maryland will give it back to you. I'll bet you there's a ton of people who have sold residences in Maryland who had withholding, who've never reported to Maryland, and Maryland is sitting on that money because nobody told them to file a Maryland income tax return.
How long can they go back, or can they go back?
3 years. If the withholding's still there, I guess they could contact Maryland and say, you know, I know I never filed an income tax return, but, didn't owe you all that money.
Right.
I don't know how Maryland handled it. I tell my clients and we either get the exemption or we file the income tax return and get the money back.
Yep.
So it's very easy to do. I wouldn't even think twice about it, Washington.
You're the man with all the answers. Thank you.
There you go. All right, Washington, good talking to you.
Oh, good night.
See you,
good
buddy.
Night.
Anyway, we're pretty much out of time. We only got a couple minutes now, Tommaso.
Yep.
So
we had two things we wanted to say. What you wanted to talk about, Medigap?
Yeah, we're going to have a show on Medigap soon because, like we were talking, Obamacare has really screwed the healthcare system up.
Mm-hmm.
And Medigap insurance, especially for people with Care First, Medigap insurance, absolutely skyrocketing premiums with Care First. I don't understand. I guess they're who knows? They're probably trying to use those people to compensate for some of the losses they've had.
Right.
And, I'm finding $150 a month savings for a lot of people who are leaving Care First Medigap insurance and going to other carriers. And it's easy to do with Medigap.
Right.
And, you should be talking to somebody if you're 68, 70, 75, even 80 years of age and you're with Care First and you're finding your premium skyrocketing on your Medigap policy, you should be quoting somebody else to say, can I get coverage? Will somebody else insure me? And if so, how much would it save me? And I'm finding $150 to $200 a month savings for our clients as we requote this with other companies.
Yeah, so people should be requoting that insurance as well as other insurances on a regular basis.
We're going to get somebody in to talk about that. What was the other topic?
The other one was just, people are getting ready to make those tuition payments going into the fall here. If they haven't set up a Maryland 529 and they live in Maryland, it's something they really should think about doing.
Because they get a $5,000 tax deduction.
Off the Maryland state taxes. So you're going to save about $400 by doing that, by flowing those contributions
for every year
through that,
through
that kind of a plan. So it's something they should do. It's a great way to go. Maryland529.com.
We're almost out of time. Who's up next week? We have a guest.
We have a guest,
Norm Champ,
from the SEC. He worked at the SEC, wrote a book, Going Public.
Going Public and some of the problems that in the SEC causes and so forth.
Yep.
Anyway, we're out of time tonight, and it was great being with you here on Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.